This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Today, we're talking about how unemployment insurance in Indiana has been affected by the pandemic and what would happen if Hoosiers lost access to it. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that number is 866-476-3881. You can also send us high-quality voice messages with our smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. You just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. We're joined now by three guests today. Justin Hicks is a workforce development reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, Taylor, thanks.
We also have Jim Sullivan. He's a professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. Thanks for being here, Jim.
Hi, Taylor. Thanks for having me.
And Aaron Macy, a senior policy analyst at the Indiana Institute for Working Families. Hello, Aaron.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Definitely. Thanks to all of you for taking time to join us today on a very important topic. I know, Justin, you've been covering unemployment in the state for some time now. What kinds of unemployment insurance and benefit programs are out there for Hoosiers?
So at the moment, there's a lot of programs out there, and it's kind of led to some confusion, and that's a mix of state programs that have always existed and new federal programs that have been implemented through the CARES Act to help people get through the pandemic. So kind of broadly, unemployment insurance has really existed for quite a long time. And the basic philosophy of it is to help people who have lost work or lost hours of work due to no fault of their own. And of course, that basic philosophy has gotten, you know, kind of confusing due to a pandemic where you're not totally sure. Do I say that the virus caused me to lose work? Do I say that the job site, which lost business, caused me to lose work? I mean, so some of those questions have gotten a little confusing for people. And to kind of step in and help other folks out who are maybe self-employed, the federal government created these programs like PUA or Pandemic Unemployment Assistance to help folks who are self-employed. So that's another option too. So there's a lot of programs right now, and the way that they all kind of work together, or sometimes maybe don't work together, has been quite an interesting thing to cover for the past 9 months.
I would imagine. Yeah, you know, I mean, before there were, like you said, a lot of programs, and now so many questions. So how has unemployment insurance and really looking at the access to it, I mean, it's changed quite a bit because of, you know, widespread unemployment across the state during the pandemic.
Sure, yeah. And I have to say access. I mean, honestly, that question of access right there, it's because self-employed people were able to apply for PUA, access actually exponentially increased to unemployment insurance. So that's a good thing, right? I mean, more people were able to access these programs. But of course, there's a lot of caveats in there. So, I mean, obviously the biggest change over the past 9 months has just been the explosion of people who need unemployment insurance. So, you know, before the pandemic, we saw maybe 2,000, 3,000 people a week applying for benefits. And that was with the state's regular unemployment assistance program alone. And that was kind of a typical week, you know, 2019, early 2020, that's what that would look like. There was claims investigators to kind of hang out there and help people out. Most of the claims really didn't have a lot of issues because it would be like a factory, let's say a car factory that was saying, we're going to throttle back for a week. We're going to tell the employees to stay home for a week. They told DWD. DWD knew about it. It was a really easy process. But, you know, starting in late March, mid-March, late March, you know, we had over 100,000 people applying for unemployment assistance all at once. I mean, all in 1 week. I think our peak here in Indiana was actually 285,000 in May. Applied for unemployment insurance, and that's just the regular unemployment insurance program alone. So, I mean, that explosion has really been the big story that's led to a lot of, issues just with managing that number.
And one of those issues, I wonder, and you know this, did the Department of Workforce Development have the technology at that time to handle that explosion?
Yeah, I mean, To some extent, I would say yes, and to some extent, I'd say no. So in one area, I know at the beginning of the pandemic, there was a lot of stories that came out about states using this kind of antique coding language, COBOL, that hasn't been used by serious developers in many, many years. And in fact, in Indiana, we actually don't use COBOL, so we were kind of ahead of the game in that respect. We actually had revamped our unemployment insurance coding system software several years before the pandemic. So in that case, like, we were in sort of a good position. But in other ways, you know, just in the number of claims that needed human assistance, people to look at those claims and actually make a decision, we simply didn't have enough human beings, honestly, in the department to handle that.
Did the agency have a call center?
Yes, there was a call center, and it was through DWD. They have since contracted out with Navient, an out company, to handle some of the additional phone calls that have come in. And of course, that creates some confusion as well, because when you hire a third-party contractor, there are certain things that Navient employees can and can't access as far as your benefits, because, you know, they have confidential information on them. They have Social Security numbers. They have your payroll records for the past however many years you've worked in Indiana. And that's stuff you can't just give to an outside company and let them access. Mm-hmm. So we do have sort of an outside call center now that a lot of calls are being directed to. But that's also been frustrating, because while they can answer general questions, a lot of people don't have general questions anymore. They have specific questions, and they have specific needs that they need, addressed.
Right. Jim, do you know what Indiana's unemployment numbers look like before and then after the beginning of the pandemic?
Yeah. So leading up to the pandemic, Indiana had fairly low unemployment rates. If you compare it to the nation as a whole, Indiana's unemployment rates were covering a little over 3%. And what we saw, like the nation as a whole, was a really sharp rise in unemployment rates at the start of the pandemic. So if you look at April of this year, as compared to March, we see unemployment rates in Indiana rise from 3% to 17.5%, which is really an unprecedented rise in such a short period of time. Since then, unemployment rates, both nationally and in Indiana, have been declining, and declining at a decreasing rate. In other words, the labor market seems to be improving, but ever so slightly and at a slowing rate. And today we're below 6.5% unemployment here in Indiana, which is now below what we see for the country as a whole. But one point to make here is that although we've made quite a bit of progress since April, the unemployment statistics alone don't tell the whole story, because what we're seeing in Indiana and really all across the country is a large number of individuals leaving the labor force altogether. So they're no longer looking for work, and to some extent that's because they've been discouraged about the prospects of finding employment. And if you're not looking for work, you're not counted as unemployed. Right. And so we see this in other indicators like measures of poverty, that there, even though the labor market is improving, individuals and households are struggling to make ends meet.
Yeah, I'd like to get into that a little more in a few minutes, but kind of going back to why the unemployment picture is looking a little bit better. What do you attribute that to? That more people are going back to work since the pandemic started, or what is that? What's that geared toward?
Well, there's a number of things that the very sharp rise in April, was very temporary because of the quick response and shutdowns that happened in the very early days of the pandemic. And so we saw a really sharp rise early on. Now, businesses have learned to accommodate to a certain extent, still transacting in the context of the pandemic. And as more businesses have found ways to operate during the pandemic, they've added additional jobs. So some people have gone back. But at the same time, it's also important to point out that You know, Justin mentioned the CARES Act. You know, when the government injected trillions of dollars back into the economy, this enabled many businesses to reopen. You know, in particular, there were resources targeted for small businesses, and that played a big role in helping businesses reemploy some of the workers that had become unemployed. And so both of those have played a role in terms of the reduction in unemployment. But what we're seeing is a noticeable slowdown in that improvement in the labor market. And, you know, Justin mentioned unemployment insurance. We're actually seeing a new rise, a recent spike in claims for unemployment insurance. And that spike is particularly pronounced in Indiana in just the past few weeks.
Any sector that was hit especially hard early on?
I mean, that's one of the key points about this, the economic circumstances we're currently in. The pandemic has not treated everybody equally, right? And certainly not every industry. There are some industries that are just getting crushed. You know, they're pretty obvious, right? The travel industry is really struggling as a result. Tourism, entertainment, you know, the performing arts obviously are really struggling. But there are other industries that have really actually benefited in some ways. We've seen significant expansions, for example, in home improvement. If you've tried to do any kind of renovation in the past few months, you're well aware of this. But it's hard to find a contractor because people are very interested in or have suddenly become more interested in doing work to invest in their homes. And you know, it's actually also caused improvements in real estate. And we see. You know, certainly it differs across the country, but we've seen in general increased demand for housing, which has led to increases in housing prices recently as well.
Yeah. Well, definitely lots more to talk about on our show today. We will be back with our guest after just a quick break. We're talking about the pandemic's effect on unemployment insurance in Indiana and across the country. If you have questions or comments for the show today, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. And you can also leave us a voicemail. That number is 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. I'm Taylor Bennett. We'll be right back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Today, we're talking about changes to unemployment insurance and access to it since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. We'd love to hear your questions and comments on this topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from. That number is 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. You can just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. Today, we're joined by three guests. Jim Sullivan is a professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. Justin Hicks is a workforce development reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting. And also Aaron Macy, a senior policy analyst at the Indiana Institute for Working Families. Aaron, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's made working jobs more difficult for everyone. Who are the people that seem to be the most affected by how jobs have changed since the start of the pandemic?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share. We're engaged right now in a process of community needs assessment for our parent agencies, which means we've surveyed thousands of Hoosiers all across the state, particularly from low-income families. And I think that's an area to focus on. These families have really been hit hard by this pandemic. It's wreaked havoc on their financial lives. Also, as we talk about, you know, Jim mentioned people dropping out of the labor force and not really showing up in our unemployment statistics. Predominantly, we have women who are dropping out of the labor force right now, and that's in part because of school closures and daycare closures. So families are sharing with us that they are pushed up against a cliff right now. Justin talked about unemployment insurance being expanded under the CARES Act. What that meant was we extended the amount of time that individuals could access unemployment insurance, but many of those programs are ending in December. And so, you know, families I'm talking to are just breaking down in tears. They are behind on bills. They are worried what they're going to do when this unemployment insurance ends, if it ends. So it is past time that Congress get this bill across the table to provide some comfort and relief to these families. I also just want to observe that even as we entered this pandemic, while Indiana's unemployment rates were very low, we know a lot of Hoosiers were on shaky financial ground. So about 4 in 10 families didn't have the emergency savings to weather a $400 budget shortfall. And nearly 1 in 3 Hoosiers had a debt in collection. So that's been really showing up in some of the conversations we're having with Hoosiers. They don't just have basic needs bills that they need to meet, but they also have debt payments that they have, student loans, medical debt. A surprising number of Hoosiers are falling behind there, as well as credit cards, which people are turning to now as they're facing budget shortfalls.
All right, many families are struggling right now.
Absolutely, that is the case. Not universally, you know, there's occasionally a sprinkle of good news in there, but I would say looking at these surveys from Hoosiers and talking to Hoosier families, it feels a little bit like what I would imagine surveying hurricane damage is like. You know, you can't see it as you drive down the street, but really this pandemic has wreaked havoc on people's financial lives.
Yeah, you talked about more women than men experiencing the layoffs and just heavier losses compared to the jobs, because so many now have to, you know, be home because of homeschooling, because of kids being at home now. They're not back in school. And I'm sure that has definitely impacted the workforce quite a bit.
Absolutely. You know, it's what are you going to do if your kids are at home e-learning? We see that women are disproportionately kind of picking up that work at home. And so you can't re-enter the workforce when you've got kids at home or you're facing some really difficult choices.
Yeah. Justin, let's talk a little bit about the process of actually receiving unemployment insurance. What does that process typically look like?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll tell you what it looks like in an ideal world, and then we'll also kind of talk about what you know, where some of the sticking points are. But ideally, right, you lose work due to no fault of your own. So essentially your boss says, hey, listen, we don't have any work for you this week. We love you. You're a great person. But we just don't have any work for you. You gotta, you know, go home. So typically what you would do is you would, you know, just say, okay, that's fine. You'd go to DWD's website, the Department of Workforce Development, and you would find a link there to the unemployment system, which is called Uplink. And you would log into Uplink. You would create a little account, log into Uplink. You would be asked some pretty basic, you know, questions, your name, telephone number, and you would enter in your social security number. And when you do that, it should pull up your payroll records from the past, you know, several years, because, you know, newsflash, every employer in Indiana is required every quarter to submit payroll records to DWD, and that includes your social security number and everything. So ideally, it finds your account on there, it finds your payroll records, it automatically puts it on your account, and then DWD says, okay, are you able, are you available to look for work? In other words, are you healthy and you want to work? If you say yes to that, then, and a couple other questions there, you know, kind of fact-checking questions, then DWD says, okay, based upon the amount of money that you were making, we think that this is the amount that you should be able to get in order to kind of help tide you over until you can find more work or until your boss says, hey, come on back. We've got enough work for you now. So that is the ideal situation. And ideally, after you file, in about a week or two, you should be getting money direct deposited into your account or through a debit card in the mail. Things that have kind of, you know, been a little catch in that system, though, have been, you know, what if your employer hasn't been submitting payroll records or has incomplete payroll records or you know, something like that. You know, it works really great if you have a great employer with a great HR system who is really great at keeping records. If they're not so great at keeping records, though, it can cause this little bit of a problem where the employer says, well, hold on a second. You know, that person wasn't actually unemployed. Or what we've seen a lot of in the pandemic is if the entire factory or your work site is gone home and DWD wants to call and fact check something and just make sure, hey, this person was, you know, laid off for a time, right? There's no one to call because no one's at the office. So there's been a lot of kind of little hiccups along the way in that process.
Well, talk about the process now, since this has been ongoing for so long. What is the process? Is it getting better to file that and get those unemployment benefits?
It's getting somewhat better because the numbers are nowhere near what they were back in May. I mean, we had 285,000 people filing in 1 week. That was really hard for DWD's system, whether it's robots plus human beings or just human beings deciding these things. It's just really hard to manage that amount of information. So it's getting a little bit better because there's only now 20,000, which is still, by the way, highly elevated from what it was, mm-hmm. but around 20 to 30,000 people filing for new unemployment benefits now. So it's a little bit easier to kind of get someone on the phone now, but still people are saying they've been waiting weeks, you know, months sometimes to get a decision made. And I should also point out, too, if you click the wrong button on the application, if you don't understand a question and you maybe click the wrong button or put in information that is incorrect, even though it was not intentional, there's no way to go back and change that. So the only way to get those like little mistakes changed is to get a claims investigator to give you a phone call, which the claims investigators are swamped. So sometimes it takes weeks just to get that phone call to say, did you click the right button? And it can be resolved in 30 seconds. It just takes that phone call.
Yeah, I remember at the beginning of all of this that people were talking about just how long they had to wait. And like you mentioned, that they couldn't get a hold of anybody to ask any questions.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's definitely taking a little while to get those questions answered still. I mean, like I said, it's been getting a little bit better as time has gone on and the mm-hmm. caseload has gone down a little bit. But it's still a long waiting game.
How much is eligible for people? How much can they get?
I believe in Indiana it's a maximum of $390 per week is the maximum benefit. Mm-hmm. Of course, federal provisions in the CARES Act and things like that boosted that in the pandemic. So you heard a lot about the extra $600 that people were getting. That existed for several months. People were getting, you know, up to potentially $390 plus $600, right? So that's $990. So people were potentially getting close to $1,000 a week. That, you know, was contentious for some, you know, who said that maybe people shouldn't be getting that much. But, you know, one way or another, the maximum the state allows is $390. Federal program could add it on either $600 or then later on, President Trump sent an executive order that added $300 on, and that lasted for a couple weeks. So varied a little bit.
Yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit about the appeals process that people can go through to gain access to the unemployment insurance? What does that look like, the appeals process?
Yeah, so if you've been told, if you think that you are eligible for benefits, but you have been told that you aren't, and you still believe that you are, you can appeal and talk to an administrative law judge. And that is essentially a licensed attorney who works for DWD and who listens to your case. And so you can go in front of a judge, you know, sort of like a lowercase J judge, I guess you could say, administrative law, that you go in front of this judge and you basically say, here's my story. Here's what happened to me. Maybe I filled things out incorrectly. I didn't mean to, but here's what happened. They'll bring in your employer if the employer wants to be there. They might bring the representative from DWD, and essentially everyone kind of talks it out right there and determines here's why or why not you are eligible or ineligible. So there is still that process if you're told you're not eligible for benefits. Also, though, that appeals process is also really clogged up right now. People are waiting many, many weeks as well for those hearings.
Have you personally talked to people that have gone through that process and it hasn't gone well?
Yeah, just recently I've talked to some people, and you know, it depends on people's cases whether it kind of went in their favor or not. The one thing that I've heard from people, though, is just that it's kind of scary to feel like you are applying for help, and then you might be getting kind of official notifications, you know, saying so. Another issue has been overpayments. People who've been getting paid, and then the state tells them, actually, sorry, we shouldn't have paid you. You owe us money back. For people who are in that situation and going through the appeals process in that way, that's been really, really scary because some people were on the hook for up to like $10,000. The state is telling them, you must pay us $10,000. And you're thinking, wait a second, why did you give me $10,000 in the first place if I wasn't eligible for it? So, you know, it's just it's kind of scary financially and legally for some people.
We got a question on Facebook from Amy who asks, can you address the number of fraudulent claims and how is DWD handling that and how does that impact the numbers?
What's actually kind of fascinating is perfect timing for that because about 30 minutes ago, DWD sent out a press release talking about how the number of fraudulent claims has greatly increased the amount of claims that are coming in. So in other words, we see the raw number of claims that are filed in Indiana every week because the Department of Labor gives that to us. The Department of Labor doesn't pass judgment on whether all of those claims were filed correctly, whether they're fraudulent. It doesn't really categorize it. It just says X number of people applied and makes no judgment. DWD is saying part of the reason why the numbers are higher than normal right now is because there's a lot of fraudulent activity going on, especially in the PUA claims, where, you know, folks who aren't eligible, and some of them may be potentially knowingly not eligible, are filing claims and just trying to find a way to get, you know, essentially free money. So we're hearing a lot about fraud. Trying to quantify that, I've been working on that for a couple of weeks, trying to quantify exactly how much fraud has been going on, but it's really tough because it's being investigated right now currently by state police, by the FBI. I've been told that even, you know, in some cases, maybe like Secret Service is on these things. So there's a lot of law enforcement agencies working here, and it's really hard to get good information on, you know, what this looks like and just how much of it's going on.
That sounds like that could be like a whole other like department that would be investigating the fraudulent claims. I mean, that would be very time consuming if you're looking at those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There is a whole department in DWD that investigates fraud.
How unfortunate, too. You know, I mean, it's, I suppose, to be expected that you're going to have some people that are going, like you said, try to get that free money.
Yeah, and it's really kind of ruined the process for everyone else who've been trying to get the money in a legitimate way because it slows everything down, right? When you have to double and triple check every single little thing to make sure that this person is not, you know, filing a fraudulent claim, it slows it down for everyone.
Jim, I wanted to talk to you. We have to go to a break here in just in a few minutes, but if we could start talking about a study that you were part of on the pandemic and the poverty rates in the U.S. What are some of those significant things that you found in that study?
Yeah, so what we did was come up with a measure of poverty that we can update every month so we can monitor the impact of the pandemic on a monthly basis because things were changing so quickly. And, you know, and what we found is that if you look early on in the pandemic, there, you know, we're talking about March, April, May, we see a fairly pronounced decline in poverty rates. And that actually can be accounted for by the initial investments that the federal government made to provide some relief through the CARES Act and other legislation. You know, we saw poverty rates decline by more than, well, by about 1.5 percentage points. Since then, we've seen a reverse in trend. We talked about some of these government benefits expiring, and the stimulus payments were just one-time assistance. And what we've seen is a steady rise in poverty every month since June. The rise has more than wiped out all of the decline that we saw in the early months after the pandemic. And it really does line up with the decline in assistance that we're receiving through federal benefits as the labor market improves, but not enough to offset the loss in benefits at this point.
Right. Is there anything that can be done specifically at the federal level that would help improve the poverty rates across the country?
Well, I mean, there's certainly something that can be done short term, right? And a lot of this we think is, you know, because it's due to the pandemic is really short term in nature. You know, Aaron talked about a lot of families that are struggling to make ends meet, and that's because there aren't good prospects for them in the labor market, and their programs like unemployment assistance are running out. You know, additional assistance from the federal government through, expanded unemployment insurance assistance or targeted stimulus payments would go a long ways.
Yeah. What about at the state and local level? Is it any better?
This is, the pandemic has, hit every state and exacted a pretty strong toll. So the data don't allow us to do precise estimates at the state level, but we know from other indicators that same pattern is true in Indiana, which is that there was some short term benefit, at least when you measure poverty from a month to month basis. And then that there's been this gradual increase in poverty since the midsummer.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be right back after just a quick break. We're talking about unemployment insurance in Indiana and how it's changed because of the pandemic. If you have questions or comments for our guest today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Taylor Bennett. We'll be right back. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Taylor Bennett. Back now to our discussion on the pandemic's effect on unemployment insurance in Indiana. And as always, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from. You can call us at 866-476-3881. We're joined today by three guests. Jim Sullivan is a professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. Justin Hicks is a workforce development reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting, and Aaron Macy is a senior policy analyst at the Indiana Institute for Working Families. Aaron, the Indiana Institute for Working Families has been doing some studies regarding the effects of the pandemic on working families. Can you talk to us a little bit about the survey project that the Institute has been working on?
Absolutely. So throughout the pandemic, we've been reaching out to Hoosiers in a variety of capacities, but most recently, on behalf of our community action agencies, we've been surveying thousands of financially vulnerable families. And as I mentioned before, and of course, as this conversation on unemployment signals, many, many people have lost work, have had hours cut, and are working to cobble together benefits like unemployment insurance. You know, we didn't talk about the fact that in Indiana, unemployment insurance is about 47% of your average weekly wages. That's a pretty significant pay cut for families to take. And I think it's important to acknowledge that while families can scrape by and maybe cut some areas of their life, it's pretty hard to cut other things. For example, you know, if you're in a lease with a landlord, you can't just downsize your rent, or you face a decision maybe to sell your car. You have car payments. So there are things that people need to be able to keep up on during long-term unemployment that makes having a robust benefit really essential, especially for, as I mentioned, those families who are going to continue to have kids home doing e-learning or whose daycares might close. And this pandemic is really different than typical unemployment. And it's really important that we have these supplemental programs available to people as the pandemic continues. I also want to note that people are telling us that even if they've maintained stable employment, many are picking up additional costs. You know, they're trying to help loved ones who've lost jobs, who are facing eviction. They're facing increased food costs, or they're maybe afraid to go out, so they're having more things delivered. So I think it's also important to acknowledge the effect on people in terms of their increased expenses, and why some of the other features of these packages that we're seeing go through Congress are important, like additional stimulus or additional SNAP. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, just the amount of debt that people came into the pandemic with, some of the lower wage jobs in Indiana that are unreliable on hours. People may be working again, but they're not receiving the same amount of tips or shifts or compensation that they normally would. So we are in a really financially fragile state. And so I think, again, it's just imperative for Congress and for our state to recognize this and to be thinking about families who are really scraping by right now.
Well, what do you think will happen to those families if Congress doesn't extend federal programs?
Well, we're already seeing, you know, Indiana has already had kind of an eviction crisis ongoing. I think we're going to see a wave of evictions. I think we're seeing already people in default, people with damaged credit. These are sorts of things that can take years to dig out of financially. So another really important point is the timing of aid. You know, Justin talked about people waiting a long period of time to receive unemployment assistance or other forms of assistance. And the fact that it's taken so long for the federal government to pass another stimulus means, you know, I talked to a mom the other day. Her kids had COVID. She missed some work, fell behind on bills. And she went online and got a loan that was at 700% APR. Mm. Now, that's an extreme example, but she fell into a trap and people are going to take on debt. They're going to have late payments. It really snowballs. So trying to stop that avalanche at the top of the mountain is so critical.
Right. I mean, you talk about families who, like you mentioned, are having to take out loans. I mean, that could be something, even if things do get better, if they do get extra aid, that those things are going to be long lasting.
Absolutely. And that's what we saw with the first wave of stimulus that, you know, didn't quite work the way economists predicted, and that people, you know, tucked some money aside and also paid down debts with it, which doesn't necessarily stimulate the economy.
Yeah. Justin, some states have what is called, they talked about the extended benefits program. It's separate from the CARES Act program. Can you go a little more into detail about the extended benefits program?
Yeah, sure. So the extended benefits program is actually something that's existed for a long time as well. It is a program that is triggered on or triggered. They always use this word triggered, but it's essentially turned on or off depending on how high the unemployment rate is in the state. And I should also mention, too, it's different from the unemployment rate that we talk about when we say the unemployment. I think there's a difference between insured and uninsured unemployment. I honestly don't remember exactly what it is, but there's a special number. For the unemployment rate there. When the unemployment gets really, really high in a state, the federal government, the Department of Labor, will say, we will turn this program on that essentially allows people to get unemployment benefits for an additional 13 weeks. So in Indiana, you can get unemployment benefits for a maximum of 26 weeks, so half a year. With the extended benefits program turned on, you can get an additional 13 weeks for up to 39 weeks of benefits. So for a while in Indiana, that was turned on. But because our unemployment rate, as Jim was saying earlier, has been going down and is actually, you know, slightly below the federal rate right now, that program was turned off. I believe it was late September in Indiana. So extended benefits actually does not exist anymore. It exists. It's just mm-hmm. turned off.
Who turns that on and off?
The federal government does.
Okay, so yeah. Would the state have to apply for that to turn it back on, or how does that work?
If the unemployment rate goes back up over, okay. I want to say 5%. If the unemployment rate goes back up, and again, that's a different unemployment rate than the one that we talk about. But if that number goes back up, then the federal government can turn it back on.
So it all depends on the rate.
Exactly. Yeah, it's one of those things where there's. You know, I'm sure there's an interplay where the state says, yes, we can administer this program, or no, we can't. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a slight interchange between human beings there. But for the most part, it's a statistical thing where it gets turned on or off, you know, depending on a number.
Jim, what's your thoughts on that?
So, you know, the program is well intended, right? It just might not be that well designed for the circumstances we're in right now. The federal government did implement its own form of extended benefits that provided unemployment insurance to those whose state level benefits were extending. But those extended benefits are also due to expire here at the end of the year. And so there's some hope that they will, if there's an additional relief package, that they will extend that. I think another important point to make about unemployment insurance is just that there's a lot of uncertainty that individuals are facing about future job prospects, you know, partly because we don't know when the pandemic will subside and its impact on the labor market, but also because some industries are being hit much harder than others. And when we talked with Aaron about long lasting impacts. I mean, I think that where the unemployment insurance system isn't currently designed to provide security is those whose jobs may have disappeared for good as a result of the pandemic, and their skills aren't aligned with what is in demand in the labor market. Those individuals are going to be facing real challenges to make ends meet as they try to get back to economic stability.
You know, I wonder, too, it's interesting, not only those that have lost their jobs, but those maybe college graduates who were wanting to enter the workforce. How is that going to look for them?
Yeah, yes, there's actually some research that, with historical data, that those who leave college in a severe recession pay a price that lasts well beyond that recession, right? So you lose that experience because you just happen to enter a labor market at a time, at an unfortunate time. And so we're certainly seeing, I mentioned the rise in those that are out of the labor force. Part of that is people who are not entering the labor force. So you have adults, people graduating college who during a pandemic, and they can't find a job, or they find a job that isn't as well suited for their skill set because other jobs aren't available. Those people are paying a price right now in the form of being unemployed or having lower earnings. But the impact, the negative impact, will extend beyond the pandemic because they've lost that experience, and it's going to take a long time for them to recover.
Right. Aaron, I'm sure that you talk to families, like you mentioned, the one woman who had to take out a loan with that high interest rate. What are some of the other stories that you're hearing from families? I mean, you know, talking about the access to unemployment insurance and what that really means for people around Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult to hear some of the stories. Jim talking about people entering the labor force right now made me think about a mom I talked to recently who, you know, went back to school to launch a career in cosmetology. She, you know, entered into student loan debt and has been having trouble finding clients and finding work. And I think one pattern that may be different in this recession is just how much student loan debt folks are carrying. And I know we pushed pause on that at the federal level for public student loans, but a lot of folks also have private loans or private debt that they're carrying. So not only are they struggling to get into a position they may have trained and spent money for, but they're also carrying this baggage of student loan debt payments and struggling. So this particular mom I was talking to, because she, you know, has lost clients, lost income, you know, she's got a payday loan she's recycling as well. And that is just eating away at her income. So again, it can be this financial snowball for folks that that fall behind, that take on debt, and then have an incredibly difficult time digging out and getting to a place where they're financially well.
What else can be done for them, as far as in addition to getting the benefits, to getting unemployment, to unfortunately having to get loans? What else do you say to these families that are struggling right now?
Well, you know, there's one big missing piece for me, at least in the CARES Act payment that's being the new CARES, I guess. I don't know if it has a name yet, the package that's being negotiated right now, that we've left out paid family and sick leave. The CARES Act put that in place for workers who aren't losing a job, you know, through no fault of their own, but who've gotten sick or whose schools have closed. That's going to continue to happen throughout the pandemic. So even if people get reemployed, you know, daycares will close, schools will probably be in and out of session. As we've mentioned, people will contract COVID and need to quarantine. So as people re-enter, we've just taken away a tool that people had to kind of income smooth, right? If you don't have paid leave, then again, you're going to be digging financial holes. And you know, I think we're gonna need to reconnect people to the workforce and in ways that are strategic and that are helping individuals, you know, like this woman who may need to make a career shift.
Yeah, Justin, you do a lot of stories on unemployment. What are you going to be working on next? Is there anything that the state is doing to help families right now?
Well, I think maybe one of the things that I'm looking at really next year, the next kind of wave, Aaron was just talking about like connecting people to reemployment, to getting those jobs again. And so that's something I've been thinking about a lot as well, as we sort of try to come out of this pandemic, you know, with the vaccine on the way, you know, what are we doing to get people who are unemployed back into jobs? And so I've reported in the past a little bit on some of the state's programs, like Next Level Jobs and ways that people can get training to get back into jobs, or to kind of, you know, shift their careers into a different career that maybe they always thought about wanting to do, but never really had the time or the money or whatever, you know, the education to get that job. The state has been kind of trying to increase pathways to shift careers and to go into certain fields. So I think I'm kind of looking into that. I'm also going to be looking into fraud kind of continuously, I think. That's as the state kind of figures out and sorts through more of the claims and determines which ones are fraudulent and which ones aren't. And hopefully as investigations progress a little bit more, maybe I can find out a little bit more about those things. So those are kind of the big things that are on my mind here in the future.
Mm-hmm. And as lawmakers head back to work in January, do you foresee anything coming out of the State House?
Well, I think one of the things, like Aaron was just saying, the paid family leave, I think, you know, if we've learned anything through the pandemic, it is that policies that help workers when things at home are maybe just not great, you know, or there's a pandemic going on and you're sick. You know, Indiana is not necessarily the most progressive state when it comes to policies that help workers a lot of times. You know, it's really great about policies that help businesses, of course, and they want to attract businesses and, you know, create new jobs all the time. Like that's what they always talk about is creating jobs. But of course, the question is, what's the quality of the work going to be like for the worker there? So I'm kind of curious to see if maybe this is a unique time for paid family leave, for a big push to be made there. You know, I actually just saw a study recently that showed that with some of the paid family leave and some of the policies that came out of this temporary federal First Families Coronavirus Relief Act, I mean, that policy alone, which implemented paid family leave kind of across the board for people, that policy alone prevented up to 400 COVID infections per day. I mean, it's just like astronomical, right?
That's
like,
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing to think about like how big of a tool that was mm-hmm. during the pandemic. And I think it might be more forefront in people's minds now about what a good tool that could be moving forward into the future.
All right. All right. Well, very good information. I want to thank all of our guests today for taking time to discuss unemployment insurance and unemployment and just everything that, you know, it's impacting so many Hoosiers right now. So, again, thank you all for taking time today. We speaking to Jim Sullivan, a professor of economics at the University of Notre Dame. Justin Hicks is a workforce development reporter for Indiana Public Broadcasting, and also Aaron Macy, senior policy analyst at the Indiana Institute for Working Families. Our producers are Drew Dahlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. If you would like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere that you get your podcast. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Taylor Bennett. Thanks so much for listening. This is All In.